This week's episode is brought to you by Squarespace, Squarespace 7 specifically. Mm-hmm. It's Squarespace's new platform for building a website. Norm, you take a lot of photos.
I do. And I haven't built a website in a long time. I remember, what is a rule that you shouldn't break? You shouldn't use tables. I use too many tables.
Don't use tables.
That's something you don't have to worry about. If you use Squarespace.
Yeah, Squarespace is a design. Squarespace 7 is a fully responsive design, so it looks right on mobile, on desktop, all sorts of different stuff. Where do your photos live now? Do you put them on other people's services where they're making money off of them instead of you?
I wish I was making money off of them.
You could build your own site with Squarespace right now to host your photos, put some ads on there, make money today.
That's right. And I guess Squarespace 7 has a bunch of new features. Seven new features. One of them that I think is really cool is like a landing page. Like they call it a cover page. I don't have a restaurant. If I was building like a website, I would want like a nice landing.
It's like a portfolio. Yes. You can have a front page,
a splash
that says,
page.
Hey, here's me. Mm-hmm. And then you can link directly out to galleries or stuff like that. Hey, here's my work.
Yeah.
So if you want to make a portfolio site for your small business, whatever, Squarespace is there for you. If you want to find out how to sign up, go to squarespace.com. You can get a free trial. You don't have to put a credit card in or anything. When you sign up to start paying, you can get 10% off if you use the offer code Untitled.
That's the name of this podcast.
Untitled, Untitled. And let Squarespace know that you like Still Untitled and you want to support the show.
And also let us know if you build a website because I want to see them.
And now on with the show. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam Savage.
And I'm Norm.
And I'm Frank.
Ippolito. I went to high school with an Ippolito, but I think we've talked about that. Mary Ippolito.
I don't remember.
She ended up clerking for a judge. I talked to her around the time of our 20th high school reunion, I think. I haven't. My 30th high school reunion's coming up next year.
My 20th was last year.
Did
it was
you
the
go?
First one I went to.
Oh, I went to my 10th, and that was awesome.
The 10th? See, I didn't know that the 10th happened until after it was done, because I had just moved to California, and I was like, I'm not going back.
I will tell you about my 10th high school reunion. I hope that some of the people I went to high school would listen to this eventually, because I went to school with the same kids, small town, Tarrytown, New York, 5,000, 6,000 people, population. Yeah. So I went to the same school, went to school with the same kids from age 5 to age 18.
What was it, like probably a 200-person graduating class or something
150?
Like that, 150?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 150. So at some point, I had a crush on every single girl in that 150 class.
Statistically, you'd have to.
Yeah, exactly.
Limited number of fish in the barrel.
Adam Savage, baseball card. I have a crush on every girl.
I'm not saying that I dated any of them, but I had a crush on every single one from, you know, Janine Nickel to Maureen Murphy to Raina Merle to Tara. I mean, really, just all of them, right?
Go down the yearbook. You're like, yep. Okay, this is creepy.
I was very gratified
to turn
see
this around.
When I went to my high school reunion that everyone that I had gone to high school with had grown into the most beautiful woman. I mean, my wife, my first wife who came to that reunion with me was like, are you serious? I went to high school with all these, they're all gorgeous. They really, like, they had all blossomed into just beautiful women. It was very satisfying. It's a different future, right?
It's, yeah. If you decided to stay at home and open up a gas station, that's the one of the potential
so
futures.
So are you going to your 30th?
I want to go to my 30th high school reunion. I totally do. I'd love to see a bunch of those guys.
So the 10th was about who you are. The 20th is about kids.
I guess.
And the 30th is about who's survived.
No, that's the 50th.
So
that's the 50th.
No, let me tell you.
I will say there was one shocker at my 10th high school reunion. I've always had a penchant for girls with big noses. I've always loved big noses. I don't know why.
Okay.
It's just a particular
big fan
thing.
Of Dirty Dancing, I assume.
Yeah, and poor Jennifer Grey. I'm so sad that nose went away. I love
an amazing nose.
And I went to high school with a girl who had the most beautiful, large nose. And when I saw her at the 10-year high school reunion, she had gotten rid of it. And she was perfectly lovely. I, however, missed it. It's a choice. And I actually had to stop myself from going, what happened to your nose?
This is a choice.
It is.
Women have the choice. Men totally. Have the choice. We
Absolutely.
Can all change our appearance however we want.
But you're right. The 10th. High school union is the people who have kids, at least in this generation, because most people have kids late. It's like, wow, you have a kid. Maybe two people have kids. That's weird.
Yeah,
at
you
20,
didn't grow up where I grew
everyone's
up.
Everyone's got kids.
At 20, it's got to be weird if you don't have a kid.
I was the youngest. I was the only person. I had the youngest kid at my 20th high school reunion because I had a 6-month-old baby
at the time.
And there were a couple people that were pregnant, but we were the late. I mean, of course, I grew up in Northeast Tennessee, and there were people who had also kids that were graduating from high school earlier that year. So it's not, you know, everybody makes their own choices. They're all valid. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't like most of the people I went to high school with, so I really don't care about any of the reunions.
I didn't stay friends with nearly anybody I went to high school with, except for a couple of people. But I'd love to catch up with some of the lovely women I went to high school with.
And it's more, it was more...
Like, I don't mean that in any suggestive way.
No. You want to see how everybody ended up, right? You want to see what the end of the story was.
Why not?
Well, I had a couple of teachers that inspired me, either positively or negatively. But
do you know that, I guess it's 2005, 2006, I went back to my high school to give a talk. Mm-hmm. And my inspirational freshman earth science teacher, Dan Frere, was there. Not only didn't he remember me, had no idea that Mythbusters was a show.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were a forgettable student.
I was a little
student.
Sad.
Oh.
Wow.
And you took a lot from him.
Yeah. Wow. And I went back and I'm like, hey, I went to high school here 25 years ago.
So did a lot of other
people. Oh, wow. But also shrug. Imagine that if he was still there in 2006 and he was teaching me in 1985...
It was a completely different science back then.
1,000 years old?
Right. He didn't look a day older. I mean, he's got a painting in the attic, I swear. He did retire a couple years ago.
There are always those teachers. Like, when I'm home visiting parents, you'll bump into somebody, and you never know.
Well, teachers are real people, too. And something I learned...
They're real people, as opposed to fake people?
Well, when you're in school, their position of authority and wisdom. I went to a friend's wedding a couple months back, and one of our high school teachers was there, and... That's the best thing.
Did you get loaded with your high school teacher?
Yes. And I didn't really know this year well. And he told me so much stuff that I never knew I really wanted to know.
Like the teachers were actively mocking you?
Like the track teacher tried to tape up kids' balls or something like that?
I want to repeat some of this stuff on air.
That happened in my high school.
But the things that happen in the teacher's lounge and the things they say, like just...
Like boom chicka wow wow?
I don't want to know.
Okay.
I got to kind of... fulfill something that people want to do. I slept with one of my sister's soccer coaches.
Whoa!
So who was a teacher at my high school?
Jesus, Frank!
Wow!
So it's a teacher from my high school.
Do you think he'd mind you talking about it on the radio?
No, to her. This is years after I graduated. This is way after I graduated and stuff.
Okay, everyone's nice and legal.
So this isn't a Catholic school tragedy.
No. This is like years after.
Okay, cool.
I got a high school teacher from my high school.
But wasn't a teacher when you were there.
No, she was not a teacher when I was there. She was about my age, so.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that's a little less.
Technicality.
I loved watching all of your expressions, though.
None of my teachers were crushable when I was.
No, there was a lot of polyester where I went to school.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So one of my high school teachers came to see your show when you were out on tour.
Oh, right. Your high school shop
teacher. High school shop
teacher. That was a nice segue.
T-Ware.
Really nice to meet him.
So really, it's almost as if you've done this before.
I've been listening to you guys before.
So
the tour.
You're back from tour.
I just got back from the tour. We did 26 shows in 22 cities in 25 days.
And we talked about this a little bit on an episode of This Is Only a Test a couple of weeks ago. From the basement of the Nokia Theater in Los Angeles, where they were doing a sound check above us.
Yes.
It was pretty cool. That backstage at the Nokia, like, we've seen a handful of backstage.
Oh, it's legendary. Yeah.
It is it's institutional. It's like a school.
Yeah.
And it's just dressing rooms as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, of course. It seats almost 6,000 people in that house. When you consider that everyone who comes through with a big stadium type show comes through that theater in LA, if they're not playing one of the ballparks, the dressing rooms can accommodate all manner of lots of different groups of famous people. So you can imagine American Idol back there. It's got to be
right.
Cool.
You had a typical, very stark dressing room with a private bathroom with a row of window or mirrors and lights. And then you also had this green room, this gaudy, lush purple.
It was awesome. That green room. And were you around? We filmed a thing for Max Landis's new film.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
Max Landis came by after we recorded. Oh. And he's working on a new film.
I need to hear about this.
It's very cool. I can't tell you about it on the podcast, but I'll tell you afterwards. And it's Max is awesome.
Max is
one of my favorite people.
So it seems like also the kind of theater that you could do like some sort of enormous benefit concert with like 300 people appearing and all that kind of stuff too.
And look, normally we were selling between 2,000 and 3,000 tickets out on the tour. And to be honest, our sales at the Nokia weren't close to filling the joint. But I forget this every time I perform there. that is, it's a terrific hall because even when it's not full, it feels full. Like, and that's good theater design, and that's also good seating arrangement by the house itself. We stood there on stage, and it sounded and looked like we were playing to a full house.
Well, were you sitting fairly back in the audience? It looked like a full house because they had spaced everybody out really, really nicely.
They did a really good job with it. So that show, which I was worried, you know, I have tons of friends in LA. I brought dozens and dozens of them to that show, and I wanted it to be a good show, and I was very gratified that the energy in the house felt really vital and vibrant, and it was really, I think, one of the best shows of the tour.
I mean, if you've never stood on stage and done a show like that where people are coming to see you, like, the worst fear is that you stand up there and there's like 55 people in the audience and nobody laughs.
Well, I mean, we've played to houses where acoustically you can't hear the crowd, especially when you play a cut down stadium. Mm-hmm. Like, you go to Canada and you play some of these hockey stadiums and the sound just disappears into the building. Mm. So the audience might be screaming their heads off, but on stage you can't tell.
Really?
Yeah. And you have to just proceed with assuming that's happening because you got to keep the energy up because people, you want to give everyone the right ride.
So you talk about maybe
microphones.
But
I will say that it helps when you can hear. Yeah, so we've talked, and I talked to my sound guy about this, that the next time we play some stadiums, we'll probably play some contact mics out and feed them back through my monitor so I can actually get some crowd feedback.
You got to hear all the farts.
It really is true. It really is. Norm's referencing, we could make the whole audience make fart noises for a very specific
reason. Oh, no, I was talking about actual farts, but yes, that too. Yes. Yes, the-
I have, there is a, because we've talked about my dodo birds on Tested and on the podcast, I want to talk about maybe one of my favorite moments on the tour, which was early on, we played Canada during the week of Thanksgiving because they don't care.
American Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Canadian Thanksgiving happens in like October, and they don't know why they do it. At least most of the Canadians I asked were like, yeah, we're not really sure.
We felt like we needed one too.
Yeah, maybe. It's, you know how it's like when one child has a birthday, you give the other one a present so they don't feel bad?
I would never do like that. Did you do that with your kids?
No, my kids are twins. Oh, they both get presents on the same
day. They got to share a party.
Okay. But my sister and I did that. We had birthdays a month apart, and the non-birthday kid always got a present on the day.
Oh, my parents would just lock us in the
very,
box.
Very generous parents.
And well, we were poor, but that was the thing that you did to make sure that the kid wasn't...
If we complained, we just got locked in the basement.
Tennessee?
Yeah, Tennessee.
But
you're not supposed to make fun of the South anymore, Adam. There were comments.
Were there?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Because the internet.
We played Toronto. And on our way into Toronto, I realized that there were several things I wanted to see in Toronto. One was the Traveling Kubrick exhibit, which was at the Toronto International Film Festival building, which is a fantastic building which you should just go to if you're in Toronto. They show lots of great movies. They show old movies. They show new movies. They always have exhibitions. And the Stanley Kubrick exhibition is playing there through the end of January, I believe. And then it's moving on to, I think, Mexico City. So I wanted to see that. I was also cognizant of the fact that the dodo casting, I have a casting of a dodo skeleton upstairs, and again, we've covered on the podcast.
We covered the one you made out of Sculpey, the one you sculpted.
But we've also looked at the casting of the skeleton.
Did we do the casting one? Okay.
Yeah, we did. That casting comes from the Royal Ontario Museum's dodo. And so their curator reached out to me and said, do you want to come on by? And I was thinking, wow, yes, I was planning on coming by. So I DM'd him back via Twitter and said, I do plan on coming by. And then because my schedule was crazy, we never ended up connecting about a time. So I just went when they opened. And lo, he was waiting for me at the door and said, we've pulled the dodo out of the display area and put it in the back so that you could have access to.
Wow.
We're treating you like a visiting researcher.
Wow. That's
desk
awesome.
Set up to it next to
white gloves?
Exactly. And the best part was shortly after I bought the casting, apropos of nothing, I called up the paleontology department and talked to their resident expert. And all these years later, I mean, this is like 7 years later, they remembered that vividly. They're like, we remembered that you called and asked all sorts of questions about the dodo and took it really seriously. And so, you know, we're treating you like a real researcher. And they said, on the elevator up, the curator said, Yeah, you do know that our dodo is mounted slightly wrong, but we didn't want to change the mount because it's archival. It's 100 years old. And I said, right, his keel sternum is too distended and misshapen. And they were like, he goes, yes. And we had never spoken about this. He goes, you have checked in on your dodo anatomy. It was super exciting. We've talked about it on the podcast that I thought that their pose wasn't right. And I was totally right. So that when I finally mount mine, and now I've got to be in my bonnet to tackle that casting again, I'm going to mount it right.
So the backstage, one of my favorite things in the world to do is do the back scenes tours of museums.
Yes.
The Natural History Museum in Washington, you used to be able to go if you were a Smithsonian member or whatever. And they take you on a through the place. Because the thing that most people don't realize about museums like that is that not only is there a public display area
of what they've got,
they have a massive collection. There's people working on other stuff constantly. Yeah. It's always cycling stuff in, always cycling stuff out.
That's like the interesting stuff working on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so for example, I've gotten a tour behind the scenes at the Museum of Natural History in New York, which I can arrange for you guys.
We should do that.
When you're there.
I want to go.
5 hours was what we spent.
I'll give
my
five
mom
hours.
And my wife and my kids, all of them were like, oh, and meanwhile, I'm like, really? These are elephant skulls? I mean, I had so much fun.
When you're asking questions and the experts are like, I think we're probably good. Let's just move on. That's when you have to pull back.
So I've gotten tours back there, and the Royal Entire Museum has, I didn't realize that one of the largest, one of the best places in the world you can go for dinosaur bones is Alberta. In Canada, you want to go to a place, you can go to the Gobi Desert or the Mongolian steppes, or you can go to Alberta and they have just gobs and gobs and gobs of really important and amazing dinosaur skeletons up there. And what they do is when they find it, they put it, they reveal as much as they can and they cover it with plaster to carve out the rock and carry it back home. And this is the way they've been doing it for hundreds.
Oh, so they cut the rock out of the ground
and then
bring the
once
rest?
Once they get it back, that's when they slowly reveal the bones. But every museum that collects dinosaur bones has thousands of bones still embedded in plaster waiting for grad students to use microscopes there to pick off every bit of non-dinosaur detritus off of these bones. I was thinking there's got to be a way we could, teach science interested kids and bring them in and have them be part of this solution. Right. I mean, I asked, does it take a grad degree to be able to sit there with? No, he said, not at all. You can train someone to do it in about a day.
So I would go do that.
Totally.
I would do that all day long.
Crowdsource
days and days.
That would be so boring skeletons. After about
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But dinosaurs.
But if you committed to a day, committed to a day where somebody, or let's say,
I think
days.
It's a week. I think you say, spend a day on me, I'll give you six.
Maybe you get a certificate, I don't know.
A t-shirt.
But I love the idea that you could actually crowdsource this because he was very clear. Yes, every museum that has dinosaur bones has thousands more than they show because it's so labor intensive to pull them out. Mm-hmm. They also do tons of casting and mold making all of that stuff.
I know a couple people that do like bone reproductions. Those molds.
Fossilization is
it's really tricky to do those.
Oh, it really is, especially since these are tens of hundreds, millions of years old.
Yeah.
So you mean if you screw it up, you can't just go buy another one and try again?
Well, it's partially not to damage the original and partially because a lot of skeletons and bones are just so intricate. I mold some pretty complicated things, but I look at some bones, I'm like, I don't know where to start.
Right.
Yeah. Like there's so many weird undercuts and places that things, like I could put rubber on it and take the rubber off and have an impression of it, but how do you cast it? How do you like...
And they make all sorts of decisions.
Yeah.
It actually...
It's tricky.
I actually was looking at their molds with an eye towards the idea that we could go in and help their techniques somewhat because it looked like there were places in which I was thinking, I might be able to help them make that one more efficient. Or they're using that kind of mother mold and they might get better results with a different kind of, it'd be great to cross-pollinate the film industry mold makers with the archival museum mold makers because I'll bet there's not a ton of
Well, you guys,
I would love
to learn.
If any of you people are archival mold makers, contact me. I want to come see your stuff. I want to chat and
man.
Be your friend.
Wow.
That's awesome.
You should head over to Steinhardt. I'm sure that they've got stuff that they're doing over there to the Academy of Science. The Steinhardt Aquarium and the Academy of Sciences has, I think, the second largest collection of fish specimens on the planet after the London Museum of Natural History. They've got over a million specimens coming out of San Francisco Bay, hand annotated from the 19th century.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's an amazing collection.
It was at the place where we went for Halloween, right?
Yes,
that's
one of my favorite museums. It's wonderful too.
And you know, we've talked about the fact that they have adult nights on Thursday nights. So does the Exploratorium now. It turns out.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that
that's
either.
Where
perhaps
modernist cuisine.
We should make a.
Well, that was a. Yes. I thought that was a one-off. I didn't realize that was a regular
thing. I happen to be walking my dogs in Dolores Park today when some guys from the Exploratorium are doing an exhibit about specifically about morality and public morality. Like, do you clean up after your dog if no one's looking kind of thing? And they interviewed me.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Of course you do.
Because if you don't, you're one of the world's greatest monsters.
Well, it's you got to think about the fact that someone else is going to pick it up. You really want someone else picking up your shit? That's just terrible. That's ridiculous. What are you, a teenager?
You're violating the social contract.
Yes.
So when you were up there,
I've used business cards out of my wallet to scoop up poop when it turned out I didn't have a bag.
I picked up poop with my hand.
I have not done that.
Yeah.
I picked up poop with Will's hand.
Yes. Will, pick up that poop. Yes, sir.
At any rate, the Royal Ontario Museum could not have been more welcoming and amazing. And I cannot sing their praises enough. They have a really wonderful old dodo skeleton. And I got to take hundreds of photos.
Oh, that's
I had
awesome.
Brought my Canon 5D. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I took some beautiful, clear pictures of it. And I'm going to dive back in.
You make a new dodo?
I'm making two. One I'm going to pose as the skeleton, but the other one I'm going to make a soft one that lies dead on the ground. So you pick it up, it's literally a dead dodo.
That's
like
awesome.
Feathers and everything. So what I want to do is, I finally realized how I want to do this. I want to I want to make the skeleton mostly out of armature wire, right? Joined with strings so that it's mobile. Then I want to do the musculature out of shugru. Which is that moldable silicone, right?
I could tell you how to make that without having to buy it.
All right, that's great. And then I cover over that with like a canvas bag and fill all the interstices with some fine beans or like a heavy grain sand.
Like big sand, yeah.
So that it moves and feels like an actual thing. And then hot glue the feathers on because hot glue and feathers love each other like few things in the world. Yeah, that was one of my favorite days on the tour. The next day, I didn't leave the bus all day because I was just spent.
Any other high points? I mean, you're 26.
Oh, wait, was that the first time seeing the Kubrick stuff?
No, I spent 7 hours with it in L.A. And it's actually coming to San Francisco. So I'll get a third chance to hang out with it.
So I love that.
Yeah, I had a couple of other amazing days. Omaha, Nebraska. Lovely, lovely town with some fantastic thrift shopping. I spent a wonderful day in Chicago, had breakfast with Peter Sagal, and we walked around all the Frank Lloyd Wright buildings in his neighborhood in Chicago.
Yeah, it turns out that's where he lived.
Yeah. And then I saw a good friend of mine, hung out with a good friend of mine, and then that evening hung out with more friends of mine, the Kurbises. We had a lovely meal right up until it was time for the bus to leave. I saw lots and lots of close friends. In Philly, I saw Len.
In Cleveland,
I saw Len. In Philly, I saw Paul of Paul and Storm. Mm-hmm. In D.C., I saw Storm of Paul and Storm. In Philly, in the evening, I saw my friend Jill. You have to find your level with touring. And the first time I toured, I didn't leave the bus and I didn't talk to or like hang out with anybody. I was just sort of super occupied. And the second time I made sure to leave the bus every day, but I didn't necessarily drop in on people in every city. This tour, I dropped in on everybody I knew in almost every city I was in. And it was fantastic.
Well, I mean, it's gotta be, by the end of the first or second week of the tour, I have to imagine the show's pretty dialed in. You're making small changes, but it's not like you're spending hours every day thinking about what you're going to do that night.
Yeah.
So then you have copious free time to spend as you please.
Yeah.
And if you happen to be someplace that somebody you don't see as often as you'd like is, then why not go visit?
And when I go through cities like New York and L.A., this time in L.A., I threw a big party at the Beer Garden at the Standard Hotel across about a mile away from the venue. In New York, I do the same thing every time I come through New York because it allows me to bring everyone I know into the same place.
Well, you're going to have to do it somewhere else in L.A. next year now that you've...
There's still a doorman.
Yeah, they almost didn't let us.
Gotta know the passcode.
It was a great tour. It was really, really fun. We're doing it again we're going to do another tour in the spring.
In the States or out of?
Yeah, in the States.
Are you going to do one in Europe ever?
We are looking at Europe. It's expensive to take all of our gear across an ocean. And so those costs have to be figured out. But eventually, yes, we do want to do the UK, for which there's a bunch of demand, and Europe, especially Northern Europe, Netherlands, Norway, big, lots of
Tested's real big in Scandinavia for some reason. I don't know.
Should piggyback with like Penn and Teller when they do their European tours. They just did one.
Oh, really?
I think maybe last year or something like that.
What do they do? They send
a container over there, and then
it's got to leave like 8 weeks beforehand.
Yep. Yeah, I've helped them pack those containers before.
Wow. That's a thing.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
And you, when you guys travel, it's the two buses, one for you, one for Jamie, and the crew splits between them.
Yeah,
and
so then the buses are sectioned into three parts. There's a suite in the back. That's where Jamie or I sleep. And in the middle, there is space for six bunks. And we had 11 crew on this, so we were almost totally full up. And in the front of each bus is a lounge, couches, a couple of televisions, running cable. And we have internet and cable dish on the buses. So it was like, We shot a tour of your bus last year, not this year. This my bus this year was different. It was Sheryl Crow's old bus. I love Sheryl Crow. I love her music. Actually, I met Sheryl Crow at the Rally to Restore Sanity and or Fear. And I turned to Julia and I said, "That's Sheryl Crow over there." And she was like, "I know." And I'm like, "Can I go tell her I love her?" And Julia said, "Her music. Tell her I love you. Her music."
It's good that you have that, because that would have been really awkward. Hi.
The show we watched more than any other on the tour was MasterChef Junior.
I just watched the finale the other night.
Have you been watching it?
No. I just watched the finale.
Okay, MasterChef Junior is changing my opinion of competition cable.
Okay, so MasterChef, not Junior, is kind of reprehensible.
It's exhausting, right?
They're terrible.
Yelling at each other.
It's Gordon Ramsay and the big guy with the white glasses.
I get weird flashbacks
Joe,
every time
and
I
really
see.
Fashionable guy.
Yeah.
First of all, I love those guys. But what you really got to see... So I have the same problems that a lot of people do with competition shows. I don't like watching people break down. I'm not interested in watching people being brought to the edge of their sanity. I like watching people do their craft. So I like...
Adam, I was on one of those fucking shows.
Right.
They're horrible.
Yeah. Right. And they can be really exhausting. I know Tracy Desjardins talked about being on different versions of them. And they're rough on the contestants. But I like the ones that show craft. Face Off is one that puts craft center.
It does. But watching the MasterChef Junior, I was just like, oh my God, those kids, they're just ruined for the rest of their life.
Well, no, but here's the thing is, it's a completely different atmosphere.
It's not even about lighter
they
touch.
They foment a real camaraderie among all of the kids. And Gordon and the other guy and Joe are all part of that. And you get to watch them be really, really sweet. And there's this big article that came out recently that talked about the fact that when the cameras aren't rolling, Gordon will step in and help somebody whip something or show them a better way to chop it. These kids aren't just preternatural geniuses. They are getting some training in cooking while they're working on the show.
But then they murder one every week on camera.
The thing is that, yes, it's a competition show, but you get to watch that. It's not like when people get sent away, everyone's like, yeah, I wanted that guy to go. There are no rivalries among these kids. They all want each other to succeed, and that infuses it with a totally different energy than any other competition.
What's the age range?
8 to 13.
Interesting.
And
before they turn into monsters, but after they're able to handle knives and stuff
and
like that.
The two youngest, these two girls, Abby and Una, they're just super crazy, adorable, and so smart and so genuine. And that's the thing is you see this other side. If you watch the BBC versions of Gordon Ramsay's show, you actually get to see him be a much nicer guy.
The BBC versions of any competition shows are much nicer.
But Gordon is very specifically like his stock in trade here is I'm an asshole, right? I'm the asshole. But Kitchen Nightmares, there's a BBC one in France where he helps this vegetarian restaurant in Paris, right? Terrible idea. And he helps put them back on their feet and the restaurant closes. And he goes back at the end of the show 2 months later to see how they did and they closed. And he had specifically found them this like 22-year-old Scottish girl to be their chef because he really liked her attitude and he thought she had what it took. And he sat down with her at lunch and he's like, so it just closed. Tell me the story. She told him and he's like, right. If they don't know what to do with you, I do. Come back to London and I'll set you up. And he puts her in one of his kitchens. And you get to see the fact that this guy prizes real craft and is loyal to the people that work for him. And, you know, I've heard he is a yeller, like part of that kitchen culture, but also fiercely loyal to the people that he really loves that are crafty.
If you make it through the gauntlet.
Right.
Then, yeah.
But you also get to see him do that with these kids. You get to see him be so, all three of them be so sweet. And frankly, it doesn't look like they're acting. When it's time for some kids to go home, it's emotional for everyone, adults included.
I have to imagine that it's really hard to be a dick to an 8-year-old.
There's none of that. There's none of that. Yeah. This is, what I've heard is that the network was really hard to sell on this show.
Yeah.
Which I totally understand, because they're selling to men 18 to 49 mm-hmm. or whatever it is, 34 to 59 or whatever. And kids don't necessarily plot into that demographic. This show is just my favorite show, my favorite reality show on TV right now.
While I agree with your assessment of the show,
don't tell me anything about the finale, by the
way. Okay. I think that I have these like really kind of weird like PTSD flashbacks when I see that, because I see how things are edited and how things are cut. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I know what those guys are going through. I know what they're not showing. Like you can feel what they're not showing. And because I've been in that situation, I'm just like, oh my God, these kids are going to be so worked over after this.
And very specifically, the part that makes me nervous on that front is, you know, all of these reality shows cut to the participants
confessional.
Talk about what's happening on camera.
Right.
So you know that right after, you know, something happened, they sit in a room with the producer, and this is at the end of a 15-hour day.
Yes.
Well, I don't think they can do that with 8-year-olds.
Or the next day. But you're doing the same thing for 12, 15 hours a day for 25 straight days or some insane schedule. And they put these kids in a room. Now, they can only have these kids for 6 hours a day or whatever the legal limit is, but they're still tired. And then the producer says, what special skills do you bring to this? And the kid says, well, I cook for my parents. Okay, can you say, the special skills I bring to this are I cook for my parents. And how do you think you're going to do? I think I'm going to do really good. Here, could you put that another way? I think I'm going to be the next top chef, right? And then these kids have to watch this program where they say these things that sound like overly ballsy. I think I'm going to be awesome.
Yeah,
and then, of course, you know that pride goeth before a fall, and they're editing it for drama. And that's what the kids will feel like when they watch the shows is what makes me nervous.
If you're not savvy on how to watch what the producers are asking you to say,
right,
I did that a lot on Face Off, like
the first season,
say,
right?
On both seasons, they would say, "Oh, were you really mad at that person?" I'd say, "No, I wasn't mad. I was."
Yeah, can you fight back?
You can fight back, because if you don't say it to them, they can't air it.
You have to give them the word
for a story.
Yeah. Right. So if you craft the way you say things so that it won't be like that dude's a dick.
But let me also put it another way, thinking both from a performer and producer standpoint. And I've told this to people who are on reality television, both scripted reality, like I guess mine's scripted reality.
I think that's the category you're in.
Yeah, whatever.
Unscripted reality.
The trick is producers will always ask you to do something to help them drive a narrative. That's their job. They need to.
Yeah, but I don't want to say stuff that's not true.
No, you don't have to. Yeah. The trick is give them something else that is also a story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can give them an arc that is your story. It doesn't necessarily place you in opposition to another, or you can give a commensurate story. Like, the other guy who's doing it, he and I have actually almost an identical background, which makes me feel very simpatico as we continue towards this thing.
It doesn't matter
what story they're going to cut with. Producers will tend to go for the easiest story they can see because they've got a lot of stories to tell. Those, how many cameras? 16, 20 cameras running constantly. They're editing thousands of hours of footage down to 50 minutes per week. Their job is tough.
Oh yeah.
And so they're looking for the low hanging fruit. The trick is, if you're one of the contestants, you don't have to give them exactly what they're asking for. But you'll be in better position if you give them something else that works.
The thing that makes me crazy about competition reality.
Did I just say the same thing twice in a row?
It's okay. It's what people. It's, you have to say the same thing twice in a row for people to really understand it, or else they don't understand it because you didn't say it twice in a row.
Yes.
The thing that makes me crazy is the sentence transition between the first and second sentence with a piece of coverage over it, and then a second sentence that clearly wasn't part of that initial statement. So someone will say something like, I think I'm the best at this. Frank did a really bad job this week. Those two things could have been part of conversations that happened hours apart.
Right,
and they're chopped together with a piece of footage. So it looks like you're saying, well, I'm much better at this than Frank is. Fuck that guy.
And you know what? Reaction shots and coverage shots, documentaries, nothing. You look at the hair. Look at what they're wearing. It's not the same.
On for Face Off, when we had to do our interview days, they had us wear the exact same clothes. They said, this is your interview day clothes. So that way they could cut things from any of the, you know,
one outfit for the entire time.
Stain. Yeah.
I don't know how he ended up on this, but
that's what
tour.
You were watching this on the tour.
Wow, we started on the tour. Great way to end your year.
Wide.
Yes. It's probably, this is the last of the end of the year.
Why not?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, sure. No, I think this is the first of the new year.
The last of the year
is the Force Unleashed one from last week. So happy new year.
Happy new year. That was a great party.
That was a great.
Oh, yes. Oh, we had a really good time. Thank you. Yeah,
it was Oh my God.
I found a babysitter. It was a lot cheaper than I expected. Who would have thought? We'll be back next week with more Still Untitled. Like us on Facebook, like us on YouTube.
The last thing I will say, many people during the meet and greets after every show on this tour commented on the fact that they listen to Still Untitled regularly.
Oh, awesome.
There were lots of Still Untitled listeners out there. I love hearing that. Thank you guys. All of you listeners who approached me at meet and greets and out in public said you listen to Still Untitled. I appreciate it every single time. It's just awesome to hear.
So there we go. Yeah. We'll do another 50 episodes next year, I guess. Why not?
Absolutely.
And I'll be continuing on Creature Geek.
Every other Friday. You have a new season starting soon, right?
Yes. As soon as I get back to L.A., I'll be recording
in the
new
spring,
seasons.
Late winter, early spring.
One of these.
We're going to nail it down.
Someday. Yeah, I'll let you know.
Have a good week, guys.
Bye,
see you next week. This week's episode of Still Untitled is brought to you by Squarespace 7.
That's right. Squarespace, it's a service that helps you build a website, even if you have basically no experience. There's a real-time tools, you drag and drop designs. There are a bunch of templates, new templates in this new version of Squarespace. And whether you're building a portfolio for yourself or small business, it's something you can use.
You know what my favorite feature is, Norm?
What's your favorite feature of Squarespace 7?
When I build websites at 3 o'clock in the morning, I always hit problems. I never know where to go. Squarespace has 24-hour online help.
Mm.
So you can get help around the clock, 7 days a week.
Design help. Engage with the Squarespace help, and I want to see your conversations with them. 3 a.m. conversations.
That sounds great. If you want to support Still Untitled, you can do so by going to squarespace.com, signing up. You don't need to put your credit card in to sign up, but when you do decide to pay, you can get 10% off by using the offer code UNTITLED and let them know that you love Still Untitled. Thanks for listening.
Bye.